Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is The Herd. Wherever you might be and however you may be making this part of your day, thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb, filling in for Colin Cowherd. On a Thursday, and look, we got games to talk about. We have actual games that took place last night in the NBA. Took place in the association. And then we have a interesting hire in Brooklyn, which on many levels makes a ton of success. On one level does not. But not necessarily the level that some would say. Welcome in. The Houston Rockets survived the Oklahoma City Thunder, seemingly postponing the inevitable. That's really what it felt like. But still, like, look, a win is a win, and there was a lot of good there, even for Russell Westbrook. And James Harden made the big defensive play of the game? In things I never thought I would ever say, in the proof that 2020 is the most bizarre year on record. Up is down, black is white, day is night. James Harden made the big defensive play last night to help the Rockets win the game. The Milwaukee Bucks are down 2-0. They appear to be in bad shape. At least they, I guess, don't have to go on the road. The Raptors are down 2-0. They'll get a chance to get closer in that series tonight. And we'll see the Clippers against what appears to be a gassed Denver Nuggets team. We got news in the NFL. We got college football. Joel Klatt's going to join us upcoming in 15 minutes. And we'll get his take on this new report out of a doctor at Penn State, what it means to the Big Ten. Does the Big Ten really trying to play football in October? All right, we'll get to that. Let's start with this. Steve Nash is the new head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Now, I heard today on First Take, I keep doing that. Why do I keep doing that? I heard today on First Take, Stephen A. Smith go through a litany of compliments about Steve Nash. How well respected he is. How unbelievably well he was as a competitor, as a player. How amazing it was to watch him go from player to guy who's a social justice warrior, a guy who loves soccer but has been able to be a consultant with the Warriors, to work hand-in-hand with Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, to have the respect of so many around the league, black, white, or otherwise. But getting a job without coaching experience is proof of white privilege. Because it only happened to Steve Kerr. Wait, what? What? Oh, Mark Jackson got a job without ever coaching before? Oh, Jason Kidd got a job with the Nets. Straight out of retirement. Not coaching before. That happened, right? Wait, what? Doc Rivers got a job with the Orlando Magic. Never having coached before. Wait, this happened? Isaiah Thomas. Larry Bird. How can you cover a sport and not know a single thing about the sport? So let me help fill people in who maybe don't understand. First, business is business. Business is about relationships, right? Business school 101. It's not what you know, it's who you know. And in the NBA, it's much the same. It's much the same. The reason the Greg Popovich hire made sense was not because Greg Popovich is a social justice warrior and he fit in with Brooklyn and he fit in with Kyrie Irving. Greg Popovich coached Sean Marks. Sean Marks came from the Spurs organization. That's why Jacque Vaughn was there as an assistant coach. Duh. It's about relationships. But coaching in the NBA isn't just about relationships. It's part of it, right? Why did Brett Brown hang on to his job as long as he did? Brett Brown had previously coached Ben Simmons' dad in Australia. There's a relationship there. There's some respect there. Kyrie Irving is a tough guy to coach. Now, look, I'll tell you, I think Kyrie Irving, of the point guards in the NBA, is probably the most talented. He's got an NBA championship to his name. And while there were rumors about Tyronn Lue, who's probably going to be the head coach of the 76ers, doesn't appear that relationship ended all that well. Whether Ty didn't want the job or Kyrie didn't want him to have the job, make no mistake about it. If you're Sean Marks and you're making a hire with this sort of team, you're consulting Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Oh, yeah, by the way, Kevin Durant has a very good relationship with Steve Nash. But more than anything, outside of having a championship ring where you can show the team, hey, look at me and look at this ring, I can take you to the promised land. Outside of that, can you think of anyone who commands more respect from a point guard than Steve Nash? Right. Steve Nash was drafted into this league and was a backup to Jason Kidd. Do you guys remember that? Right. Then he went to Dallas and became a star. Then he came to Phoenix and became a superstar. So he's found his way not only in the league from a place in the world in Canada where no one had produced an NBA player, let alone an NBA star, let alone an NBA superstar. And then he became widely respected as the best point guard in the league. And he was twice voted the best player in the league, the MVP, right? A soccer playing, fun loving, defense occasionally player who led the Phoenix Suns to the best record in the NBA. And if not for one dumb suspension because of a rule that was just idiotic, they probably beat the Spurs, go to the NBA Finals, may win an NBA championship. But that regards to the fact. To win in the NBA, you have to have the respect of the locker room. And to have the respect of the locker room, you have to have done one of two things. You have to have won a championship as a coach, or you have to have been a great player. Right? That's it. Steve Nash has that. But the idea that this somehow, like, this is a big part of the problem. Because there is no meeting in the middle. And so you end up turning off more fans than you possibly turn on. If you want to tell me that white privilege exists in certain parts of our society, that's great. In basketball, you're going to have a really hard time. Basketball is a game that is dominated by black players. It just is. And they have gotten... Black players have gotten more and have earned more opportunities to coach than in any other sport. Probably, if you combined all the other sports combined, it's a great sign of diversity. It's a progressive league. But in this particular instance, show me somebody who makes more sense. And if you want to make the argument of Jock Vaughn, who I love, like you're not going to find somebody who loves Jock Vaughn's game more than me. And yes, Jock Vaughn failed in Orlando as a head coach. It could be pointed out that Doc Rivers failed in Orlando as a head coach and got a second opportunity. If the players really respected Jock Vaughn as their head coach, doesn't it stand to reason that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and DeAndre Jordan would have gotten on the plane and gone to Orlando to at least show solidarity for him? Didn't have to play. Show up for your coach. Show up for your team. They didn't. Because he's not that, he doesn't have that type of respect in the locker room. And so what Steve Nash is going to do is keep him as a coach because he's been a head coach. He does know the game. He does know the players. He does know what works and what doesn't work. And you surround yourself with guys that know what you don't know. All right. Go back and look. Larry Bird. Now, Isaiah Thomas also got a job when all he'd been a president of the Raptors organization. He got the job and failed in Indiana. When Larry Bird got the job, and he had never been the head coach before, again, I know Stephen A. knows this because he knows and covers the NBA. He has for years, but apparently he just has memory blank when it comes to Isaiah Thomas and Mark Jackson and Doc Rivers and Derek Fisher and Jason Kidd. Like, oh, I just blanked on those names of similar players with similar careers who had a similar ascension to a head coaching job, and no one ever mentioned race when they got it. Nor should they. But, you know, as is the point, when Larry Bird got the job, he hired Dick Harter. I swear to God, that's actually his name. H-A-R-T-E-R, legendary defensive wizard, former head coach in college. He coached the Kamikaze Oregon Ducks. That was his defensive coordinator. And I believe Johnny Bock was his offensive coordinator. I could be wrong. He hired a guy to do offense. He hired a guy to do defense. And he just communicated with players. And it worked. They went from losing in the first round of the playoffs to the NBA Finals. Why? Because Larry freaking Bird commanded the respect of stars and veterans in the NBA. Why? Not because he had coached before. Because he's Larry damn, Larry Joe Bird. MVP, Finals MVP, first ballot Hall of Famer, arguably one of the five greatest players of all time. So look, why did he get the job? He's got a great relationship with Sean Marks. They played together in Phoenix. He's been a general manager of the Canadian national team. Yes. Yes, he was an analyst for Turner Sports covering soccer. Love soccer. But he worked with the Warriors and established a relationship with Kevin Durant. And more than anything, he commands the respect of Kyrie Irving and anybody who challenges anyone's knowledge in basketball. Let's not make race a factor when it's not a factor. Let's not assume race is a factor at first glance. Sometimes it is a factor. And those things need to change and evolve. But when you play the race card every time a white guy gets a job and a black guy could have, it wears everybody out, especially when you have absolutely no leg to stand on because the exact same thing has happened with black coaches before and no one said a word, nor should they. If it doesn't work, Sean Marks gets fired. If it does, he gets an extension. It's really that simple. All right, coming up next, Joel Klatt's going to join us. Will the Big Ten play football? We'll discuss next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Men, boost healthy testosterone and burn fat. Try M-Drive Boost and Burn. Feel more energized and lean. M-Drive Boost and Burn. Check it out at mdriveformen.com. mdriveformen.com. We'll get back to hoops and another talented player on his way out of Jacksonville. Like, they ain't messing around. For anybody who's like, well, we're tanking. Yeah, tanking works. Don't believe me? You take away the fact they were banging trash cans, Houston Astros. You can tell me the 76ers hasn't worked. They're a playoff team every year with two stars. And they've had plenty of they've screwed up some draft picks, and they're still very competitive. Tanking works. Milwaukee Bucks tanking. Celtics tanking works. Works. Well, maybe unfortunately, but it works. The Jacksonville Jaguars are really, really, really trying to be bad. Okay. There were kind of signs of hope. And now there's a new report out that maybe there's not signs of hope. Meanwhile, Big 12, ACC, and the SEC are going to play college football. When you watch Fox cover college football and the Big 12, you're going to hear Gus Johnson, awesome, and Joel Klatt, awesome. Our number one team, Jenny Taft, in the sidelines, of course. Joel Klatt joins us here in The Herd on Fox Sports Radio. First, Joel, let's just get with the teams that are playing. What's college football going to look like? You're going to be in, is it in Fort Worth this year or in Waco this year? TCU, SMU to start the year. Is it Baylor, SMU to start the year? Which one was it?
Yeah, so TCU and SMU play Friday night next week. We will not do that game, but we've got Louisiana Tech Baylor on Saturday. So I'll be down in Waco. And, man, I'm looking forward to it. I'm just hoping that we can get to that point. You know, lots of Zooms and protocols and everything going on this week, and I've got to tell you, I'm growing optimistic that it's actually going to happen and that Gus and I will be down there calling the game. You know what it's going to look like? I'm not sure. I don't think any of us really know, but Doug, I do have to tell you that I think the game, you know, the Austin Peay Central Arkansas game was pivotal and important, and in large part because I think it it proved that even with limited resources, both teams having to travel, that it can happen, right? And so I think that it gave a boost to the Big 12, the SEC, the ACC, that they can do it. And not only they can do it, but they can do it safely. I think you saw that Central Arc had no positive tests, and so they're going to be playing again this week. So I'm optimistic. As far as what it's going to look like, let me just tell you this. This is going to be the most difficult SEC internal schedule that we've ever seen, ever. So pin Clemson into a potential college football playoff if we get there. Maybe and most likely Notre Dame as well, just because I think that we're going to have two losses per SEC team because of the gauntlet that they're going to go through.
Okay. Fascinating, because obviously Clemson would only have to play, Notre Dame? Notre Dame and Clemson both in the ACC this year, which is just fascinating. What about the status of the Big Ten? It was over, then there were protests, then it was like, let's do a vote. No, still over. Then all of a sudden there was hope. There's a call between the president of the United States and the commissioner of the Big Ten. The president says at the one-yard line, and now maybe it's the wrong one-yard. There's two one-yard lines. And now there's a report out of Penn State Penn State's director of athletic medicine, a man named Wayne Sabastianini, excuse me if I mispronounce his name.
Better you than me.
Okay. Sabastianelli. There we go. Sabastianelli. Wayne Sabastianelli says, when we looked at our COVID positive athletes, whether they were symptomatic or not, 30 to roughly 35% of their heart muscles were inflamed. Does this shut down any possibility of the Big Ten playing football?
Yeah, I don't know, because we've had, I think a lot of, to be honest, differing opinions on this. He's referring to kind of the myocarditis issue and the inflammation of the heart muscles, which I think is important to note is not new, right? Doug, this is not something that has popped up because of COVID. This is something that happens on a regular basis due to any number of viruses that you can get, including the flu. So I think what's interesting for me, having been an athlete, and I'm sure you as well, is that this is the first time that we've really focused and done a battery of heart testing after a virus. So now the protocol is if you get a positive COVID test, all these schools are then putting you through a battery of heart tests, EKG, cardio MRI, so on and so forth. And so these things are now popping up. Now, it is treatable. It has been around a long time, but I don't want to minimize it, because it's certainly something that they targeted as a reason to shut things down 3.5 weeks ago when we were talking about all this stuff. I don't know what it means, to be quite honest with you. I do know that it's much safer now. They're in a better spot now with the battery of testing post a positive COVID test than in previous years and decades when this was not something that went on, and you would just basically need luck to figure out a diagnosis of myocarditis. So it's certainly interesting. I think that it's the one thing that the Big Ten certainly hung their hat on. Mm-hmm. The other part of their issue 3.5 weeks ago was the point of care rapid results tests were not necessarily available. Maybe they're becoming more available, which then makes it easier to diagnose the after effects, if you will, of the positive test. I'm not sure. I do know that there's a lot of people working really hard to try to make this season happen as soon as possible. But I don't know what this vote is going to turn out to be here later this week.
Well, it's fascinating. I'm you and I are lockstep in the and part of it is we cover it, and part of it is we played it, is that we know that athletes get way better everything when you're on a college campus. And so you're better off being around your team. Also, in terms of going out to parties or whatever, there's no pressure of doing the right thing if you're not under the watchful eye of your coach and your teammates. You are if you have a season, right? You don't want to hurt our season, do you? And the myocarditis thing is scary, but again, you're not going to know you have it unless you're playing sports and they're testing you for it. And if you test where you have it, they shut you down, right? This is, I don't think it's as hard as we're making it out to be, but I wonder when are we point are we past the point of no return with the Big Ten? That's my big question. Are we past that point to where you're like, look, it's all just political palaver. This is not going to happen. They're just going through the motions.
Well, let me tell you this. I fully expect a Big Ten season to happen at some point, whether that's, you know, later in the spring or Jan 1 or December or November. I fully expect, because as was, I thought it was so much different than the Pac-12 in that the Pac-12 kind of punted, gave their reasons, and then, you know, went back and faded off into the background. The Big Ten punted, did not give the transparency, but immediately set up their return to play, you know, panel, commission, if you want to call it that. And there was an optimism that it was very, very much a postponement rather than a cancellation. So I still believe that we'll see Big Ten games at some point. I don't know what that looks like. I really don't. But I do think that we're going to play at you know, to some degree. And as in particular, as the point of care rapid results tests become more available, there was one from Rutgers that a lot of the coaches within the Big Ten pointed to, at least to me privately, and said, listen, we can do this right now. Lots of the coaches are lockstep. ADs are lockstep. They want to get this done as quickly as possible. But it's important to note that they're not the ones at the table making those votes and raising their hands yes or no. If I was a betting man, I would say that we see Big Ten football before the start of the year, Jan 1. I think that we're going to see something materialize before that point.
Joel Klatt is our guest here on Fox Sports Radio, of course, lead college football analyst for Fox Sports. You talked about Clemson, you talked about Notre Dame, talked about the gauntlet of the SEC. The conference you're going to cover is the Big 12, and it's an interesting year. Another year, another new quarterback for Oklahoma. And then there's Oklahoma State that now has its own reality show. They've had their own weird off season with Mike Gundy and the T-shirt. And then, of course, there's Texas, who returns their starting quarterback, and people thought they were back last year. They're like, no, not back last year. Then there's Texas this year. Give me your sense of the Big 12, as we haven't seen spring football, so we don't really know what to expect.
Yeah, I mean, when you've won the league 5 straight years, I think it's hard to look other places, right? I mean, Oklahoma is recruited at a high level. You got a great coach. It has not mattered whether they have a new quarterback or not. Spencer Rattler, who was named the starter this week, is eminently capable. He's a heck of a player, very talented, and I think he fits Lincoln Riley very well. It should be noted also that Lincoln Riley fits his quarterback about as well or anybody or as well or better than anybody in the country, meaning that he will tweak his offensive system in order to showcase the ability of his quarterback. Just think about the last 3 seasons. Baker's offense looked a little bit different than Kyler's offense, which looked drastically different than Jalen Hurts' offense, in order to showcase the ability of the quarterback. And I think we can expect the same out of Spencer Rattler. What that looks like, not quite sure yet. Can't wait to see them play next week. We'll be there, Gus and I, for the Kansas State game later in the month. So it's hard to look other places. I will say this, that you brought up 2 teams that I'm very high on, Texas and Oklahoma State. Because of their returning rosters, specifically as they've got their quarterbacks back, you know, Hubbard is an unbelievable player. I think he's the best running back in the country. Yep. I think Texas is probably more back this year, or should be more back this year than last, because they have so many more returning players. And in particular, Doug, on the defensive side, where they were decimated by injuries last year. So not only do they have returning starters, but they have returning depth, because all of those kids had to play way too early last year. They've got their quarterback back. And then a huge note, I think that this is very important. They've got really good coordinators. Tom Herman brought in Chris Ash, who is the head coach, remember, formerly at Rutgers.
But he's at Ohio State before that, right?
Coordinator at Ohio State when they both won the national championship together. And then he also brought in Mike Yurcich, who was really good at Oklahoma State, went last year to Ohio State and was the quarterback coach for Justin Field under Ryan Day, and now he's going to come down there and be the quarterback coach / offensive coordinator for Texas. 2 really, really good hires. So I'm high on Texas. I think Oklahoma State could have a great year, but you got to beat the best in order to be the best, and that certainly is still Oklahoma.
Jamie Newman was a transfer from Wake Forest, right? And he was set to he was competing for the starting spot at Georgia. JT Daniels, who I know you covered at USC, right? Modern day kid, didn't play his senior year in high school, instead went straight to SC. Then he hurt his knee. Slovis was a better quarterback than him. He transfers to Georgia. They're competing for a starting spot with UGA. And then yesterday, Jamie Newman opts out of playing because of COVID concerns. Is that why he opted out? Did he get beat out? Like, why? I don't really understand. Why would you transfer to Georgia and then you're going to get an opportunity to play for Georgia and not want to play for Georgia?
Yeah, I think that it's fascinating. I don't want to speculate because you don't know what his family situation. He may have somebody in his family that has severe comorbidities right now that we don't know about. And I think then precautions are necessary.
But you don't home. But if you're in campus, you're not going home, right? Like, that's part of the thing
I
is.
I totally understand.
Like, it doesn't make any sense.
I'm really trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, in particular for a guy who at best would be a middle-round draft pick, and he's just seen three guys in subsequent years, three straight years, go from preseason middle-round draft picks to the number one pick in the draft at the quarterback position. Baker Mayfield was not thought of as a first-rounder, then he went number one. Kyler Murray the same, certainly Joe Burrow the same at LSU. And now he's got the opportunity where he has to play in order to increase his value for the rest of his life, and he opts out. It looks strange. I will tell you that if you were just basing it off what I've seen of the two guys on film, if JT Daniels is healthy, he's a tantalizing talent, the way that he throws the football. And in particular, in an offense that isn't quite, I would say, how do I put this?
Can I help you? Can I help? Let me help you. Jake Fromm has no arm, right? He does not have an NFL arm. He was a tremendous college quarterback with a very limited arm. JT Daniels also doesn't have a big-time arm and is probably a better thrower than Jake Fromm, right? So he wouldn't succeed if you're trying to throw the ball deep down the field, but in the context of Georgia's offense, he actually works quite nicely.
I think he does, and we'll see how that offense is supposed to change a little bit, but we'll see how it changes. I would be speculating on why he decided to opt out, speaking of Newman. I really would. I was shocked. When I saw that, I was absolutely floored.
Can't wait to hear you and Gus call games, man. I'm excited for you, although I just wish it was the full slate. I wish it was the Big Ten as well. We'll wait and see what happens. In the meantime, thanks so much for joining us, and I guess the golf days are over for now.
Yeah, exactly. The clubs are going into storage, but that's a positive development. I can't wait to go call games, man. I don't know what this season is going to bring, what it's going to look like, but let's hope that we get as many games as we possibly can for these kids' sake who just want to go out there and play football.
How excited is Gus about calling the Rattler? Rattler as a last name, right? Like, that is a...
Oh, can you imagine? I mean, I can't imagine what he's going to give us as far as nicknames. I mean, I don't know if you can top Hollywood Brown, but I'm sure he'll try.
He will succeed because he's Gus. Great stuff. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right, buddy. Have a good one.
The one and only Joel Klatt. Join us, lead college football analyst, Fox Sports. Let's get you Ryan Music with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Great stuff between you and Joel Klatt there, Doug, getting us ready for
He was trying to do the political thing. Like, I don't know how to describe Georgia's offense. And like look, if you watch Jake Fromm throw it at the combine, you're like, dude, he has no arm. Like, yeah, well, he succeeded at Georgia because they were dink and dunk, if you could be accurate, which is JT Daniels. Doesn't have a good arm, but can be really, really accurate.
Can't wait for the return of college football. Let's start off with some NBA, Doug. Richard Jefferson, former NBA player, now an analyst, I guess you could say, turned the world upside down. He tweeted after the Bucks lost again last night, Giannis might be Pippen. There, I said it. He needs his Jordan. Now, we have a couple of responses to this. Scottie Pippen responded saying, I'm not Giannis. I don't have back-to-back league MVPs. He will in a matter of days. And he's not me. The question is, who were you as a player? With a laughing emoji. Richard Jefferson responded saying, Scott Burrell. Facts.
Well, look.
Self-deprecating.
Self-deprecating.
Yeah.
What is the point of... I don't really know what the point of Scottie Pippen going after Richard Jefferson was.
I mean, he did the laughing emoji, so I think it's more of just like their friendly.
Yeah, I don't.
Friendly banter.
There's no. Yeah, I don't. I don't get that. I don't get that part of any argument, right? When Rich Jefferson was a really good NBA player for a long time. He's a well-respected. He's a bright dude. He's good. So I don't. He in no way was correlating his career.
No.
The problem is that he's never. I don't think he's ever going to play around a Jordan, if you will. I just don't. One of the reasons he's been so statistically dominant is the whole team is built around him.
Right.
And I don't know how effective he is off the basketball.
I guess the only way he would play with his quote-unquote Jordan is all of those rumors, early thoughts that the Warriors are continuing to try and align themselves to be able to acquire Giannis.
Maybe. It would be amazing. It would be amazing, right? But he would essentially play like center, right? That's how.
And you'd move Draymond to the four.
I would move Draymond to another
bench.
Team.
Okay.
You know, we talk a lot about Draymond and how limited he is offensively. I will say this one thing coming off of watching Houston play a great deal. PJ Tucker is their Draymond Green, their small ball five, and he's a better offensive player slightly as a shooter. He's not the passer, Draymond. And the thing that Draymond gets respect because he can cover big guys. What people don't understand is he can guard guards. And one of the things that was made pretty obvious was PJ Tucker could not keep guys in front. So, let's not completely. Do I think that Draymond's an all-time great? No, but as a role player, he is.
So similarly to this conversation, Richard Jefferson's original tweet about Giannis and Pippen. Jay Williams jumped in on this one. He said, "So LeBron was a Pippin when he was with D. Wade once. Nothing wrong with that until you get over the hump." That comment alone, you can get to that. Just give me one second. Because King
you ever
James
walk into a bathroom and somebody just blew it up, and you're just a face you make. Anyway, go ahead.
King James himself has jumped into the conversation on Twitter, responding to Jay Williams. "Explain to me what the F I gotta do with this subject matter. I'm over here minding my business, preparing for Houston. And by the way, I ain't never been nobody but my dang self. S."
You know, I there are times in which I'm not in love with LeBron and his use of social media or the way in which he does that... He does that. What's it called? Where he kind of turns on people, but just won't talk to them anymore, right?
Passive aggressive.
His passive aggressive thing that he does. Like, I love this tweet, and just when you read Jay Will's tweet, it was like walking into a bathroom that somebody blew up, right? Like, what is that smell? What are you even talking about? Like, I have no idea what you're talking about. There was never a moment
ever
in Miami when it was anything other than LeBron. Like, it was weird to see how they fit together. But yet, no.
Yeah, at no point during LeBron's, was it 4 years in Miami? Did anyone look at that team and go, "I don't know if LeBron's the best player right there"? Maybe for like one game, Dwayne Wade would be better, or like two games here and there.
ESPN's having a tough day. You got Stephen A. Smith playing the race card that doesn't exist, and you got Jay Williams saying that LeBron was, for a period of time, was the Robin to Batman as Dwayne Wade. That is a rough couple hours of network TV. And that's Rhyme Music with the News.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Wait, read me that tweet one more time.
From Jay Williams. Responding to Richard Jefferson saying, "Giannis may be a Pippin. There, I said it. He needs a Jordan." That's what Richard Jefferson said.
Yeah.
Jay Williams' response. "So, LeBron was a Pippin with D. Wade once. Nothing wrong with that until you get over the hump."
Wow. We're just going to leave that one there. Now it becomes like the elementary school bathroom you walk into and you see something in there. You're like, "I'm not even going to try and flush that. That's just, oof. That stunk up the entire room." Jay Williams is a great college player. Great college player. And I think would be a really good NBA player today based upon how the game is played, because it's kind of a combo. but he will not make my list that you will love and you will break down in The Best for Last is next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. Big man's back on Monday, by the way. I don't know. Wonder he's like an electric car. He had chose to plug in his battery. Boost healthy testosterone, burn fat. Try M-Drive Boost and Burn. Feel more energized and lean. M-Drive Boost and Burn. Check it out. MDriveForMen.com. That's MDriveForMen.com. We can't wrap this show talking about James Harden and Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook if we don't get a best for last.
It's almost the end of the show, but that doesn't mean we're phoning it in. Nope, we grind to the very last segment. It's time for Best for Last.
Okay, so here's what we decided to do. You know, there's been so much talk about CP3. There's been a lot of talk about Russell Westbrook that I thought we should put together a list of my personal top 10 point guards of the modern era of basketball.
Number 10.
Kyrie Irving. Now, I would make the case that Kyrie Irving is as talented as the number one guy on this list. Number two guy on this list. Kyrie Irving has won a championship. He did hit the big shot to win a championship. Kyrie's the issue is, though, that, man, Celtics are better without him. Cleveland went to the finals without him. Brooklyn looked good without him this year. I think he's a supreme talent. Can he get along with people? Can he stay healthy? He's not a very good defensive player. That's not what makes it bad. What makes it bad is he's a bad defensive player that won't listen to his coaches and will guard the other team's best player just to try and make a point. And the point that seems to be made is he's not that good a defensive player, right? So there's a lot of other stuff, but man, is he good. I mean, he could lead the league in assists. He could lead the league in scoring. He's that talented. Kyrie Irving at 10.
Number 9.
Gary Payton, the glove. Elite defensive player. His entire NBA career. Only took the Sonics to one NBA Finals. But, I don't know, Gary Payton was a perennial All-Star, was an Olympian. Could really, really score. Could really lead. And could really play both ends of the floor. And a College Basketball Player of the Year, I should point out, with Oregon State. The glove at 9.
Number 8.
James Harden. Like, whoa! Gottlieb! Russell Westbrook. Now, when Russell Westbrook and James Harden were in Oklahoma City, in the fourth quarter, James Harden was a point guard. When Russell Westbrook is now in Houston, James Harden's a point guard. I mean, James Harden has led the league in assists. He's an MVP. He hasn't won the big games. No, he doesn't play much defense. Until last night, in the all-time 2020 headline, James Harden with a big defensive stop. Who saw that one coming? Harden at 8.
Number 7.
CP3. Now, if you want to hold the fact that he hasn't won big against him, okay, we got to do the same thing against James Harden and the glove, right? But he is the quintessential point guard. He defends, scores, he leads, he's tougher than a $2 steak.
Number 6.
Steve Nash. Now, look, Nash never won anything either, but he was a two-time MVP, and Sean Marion should still send him a portion of any check he's ever gotten because he made Sean Marion. He made Amari Stoudemire. He was just an unbelievable passer. Do I think he made Dirk Nowitzki? No, but their ability to play small with Don Nelson changed the league forever, forever. Nash at 6.
Number 5.
Not really a point guard, but, I mean, Steph Curry belongs on this list. Two-time MVP. Guys won 2 NBA championships. Again, Kevin Durant was just as much their point guard as Steph was. He'll have to be, I think, heading forward more. Steph Curry, though, great player. And changed the game with the shots that he has taken and hit a high percentage of. Previously were seen as bad shots until Steph made them. Now you're like, okay, well, Steph made them. If you work on them, maybe you can too.
Number 4.
Jason Kidd. Wait, Jason Kidd ahead of Steph Curry? Yeah, because he plays the other end of the floor. Obviously not the shooter of Steph Curry. I mean, he's just not. But one of the all-time great passers, unbelievable competitor, maybe the fastest point guard we've ever seen. Not quickest, fastest. Fastest. Jason Kidd at 4.
Number 3.
John Stockton, again, and won anything. But some of it wasn't as much his failings as much as Karl Malone, and he played for the Jazz. I don't think anybody thought their talent was at the level of other teams. I mean, again, quintessential point guard, all defensive team, defensive player of the year, and the all-time assist leader in NBA history. All time.
Number two.
Isaiah Thomas. Don't want him running my club. Don't want him as coach. But as a point guard, dude, go back and look at Isaiah Thomas's numbers. How nasty. He was filthy. There was a drop-off. He got hurt later in his career. But about the first 7 or 8 years, he was right there in the conversation, the best player in the league. And they won 2 championships. And he's tough as hell. And he played both ends. And he led.
Number one.
Irving Magic Johnson. Now, he would never make anybody's top 10 list in terms of Twitter. Okay? But he's the greatest Laker of all time. He won the 5 NBA championships. He hit big shots, the baby hook, the running three in Boston Garden. It was him and him and Bird were the 2 best players in the league. They changed the league forever. Kyrie at 10. The glove at 9. James Harden at 8. CP3 at 7. Steve Nash at 6. Steph Curry at 5. Jason Kidd at 4. John Stockton at 3. Isaiah Thomas 2. And Magic Johnson 1. That's the best for last. I don't see the Nuggets being terribly competitive tonight. I don't know how you have any that kind of energy. I do think that Toronto's a 2.5-point favorite. I do think tonight's a night where, like, look, Boston needed Marcus Smart to jump up and hit 5 threes almost in succession to win that game. I think Toronto gets a win and covers. They're 2.5-point favorites. I think the Clippers stomp the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets, they may actually take tonight off just for a night of rest. All right, back tomorrow to break it down and get you ready for the Lakers Rockets. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is The Herd.